Today is Tuesday, May the 3rd, 2016. Currently have 7:01 p.m. I'd like to call our meeting to order. Tonight's invocation will be given by Councilmember Reese, followed by the pledge given by Councilmember Zappala. Mrs. Reese.
Heavenly Father, we are grateful for this opportunity to meet together tonight as a council and as residents of this wonderful community. We are grateful for the wonderful city that we live in, and for those are our neighbors who actively participate in working together to make it a wonderful place to raise families. We ask you to bless us, that as we discuss the issues facing us regarding the city, that we will be able to do so with an intent to do good for our community, that we will be able to have respect and dialogue, and we pray for these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Will the audience please rise and repeat the pledge with
me? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mrs. Reese. Thank you, Mr. Zappala. First item we need to do is approve the meeting's agenda. So would someone like to make an amendment?
I would like to.
Mr. Geddes, go right ahead.
I would like to amend the agenda and put item number 14 after item number 8 and leave everything else the same.
Okay, move it to the top of the scheduled items. Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Moving on to public comments.
Not to pick up the sheet.
Did anyone sign up for public comments?
I don't need to pick it up then. Okay, very good.
We will close the public comments section of our meeting. Move on to public hearings, and we have three. First is item number 4, amendments to the general plan of the city of Cedar Hills. Has anyone come to the meeting to speak in the public hearing for that item? Council members also have the ability to speak if they chose to. No? Okay. Next is item number 5, also public hearing, amendments to the city code Title 10, Chapter 6, related to planned commercial development projects. Is anyone here to speak on that item? No? We'll close that and move on to the last public hearing item, item number 6, amendments to the city code, Title 10, Chapter 5, related to conditional use permits. Is anyone here to speak on that public hearing item? No? Thank you very much. As a conclusion of all the public hearings that we have on the agenda, moving on to city business and reports. I'll start from my left. Mr. Bunker, why don't you go ahead?
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple items to report. This last week, staff met with Peter Quitner, the county's emergency management coordinator, to talk about Everbridge, which is a mass notification system. Currently, the city of Cedar Hills, we started out with a group called Parlant, which were then acquired by Cloudspeaker, and I believe is now Blackboard, I think is their current company name. It's a very good program to be able to do mass notification, especially in the case of emergencies, but we wanted to explore options to see if we could get better service and reduce our costs there. And the county would like, if possible, all the cities within the county to be on the same platform. And so I believe all the cities in the county are with Everbridge except for two or three cities right now. So we are exploring the option of moving over, converting over our mass notification system to Everbridge. There are some advantages that we see. We actually do like the platform better. One of the benefits, I think, is that they have an app where residents can actually participate and send the city notifications. Let's say there's a street light out or a pothole or some kind of a emergency issue that they feel they would like to make the city aware of. They can actually send that to the city and we can receive that real time. The Everbridge system, what we're checking out is to make sure that it can convert our data into their system easily. We use Cassell as our accounting software, and right now Cassell actually can upload file data into our Parlance system, and it's been pretty good that way, and it automatically updates. So we're checking that out to make sure that that same process can happen with Everbridge. And so we are going to do some more homework on that. I just wanted the council to know that we're looking at options here, but it does look promising. And the cost would be a little bit less than what we're paying now, maybe $500 or $600 a year.
David, can I just offer you one piece of input on that?
You bet.
So with Everbridge, and this was a concern of Parlant as well, one thing that would be really nice would be if we're going to use it to send out emails, aren't we sending out our weekly emails to residents via Parlant right now?
We do. We have a list of email addresses that the city has gathered.
So the question there is, it would be really nice if Everbridge would allow residents to subscribe themselves and unsubscribe themselves if they move through a web interface, so they can just do it on their own without having to call the city. Or
I believe they have a similar option.
If we set it up by category, they can go in and with their own profile and pick the categories they want.
With Everbridge? Nice. Okay.
But we'll follow up on the subscribe, unsubscribe. That's a good point.
Then you can do it for other cities, say, if you're working in a different city.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that was a very neat feature, is you could get notifications from American Fork. If your children go to school down there, you can get their emergency notifications from American Fork, or you know, from Highland. If your student is at the junior high over in Highland, you could actually get notifications from that city as they participate. So you can select on certain areas that you want to get notifications from, which was really nice. We were following a few of the issues that related to water, and I noticed we are members of the Utah Water Users Association, and they put out a monthly newsletter. One of the items that came up in that was a concurrent resolution that was passed in the Senate. They called it SCR1. It's a resolution encouraging universal metering of water systems.
This is in the Utah Senate?
Yes. And let me pass down a copy of this resolution that was passed. It passed through both houses and was signed on the governor's desk February 24th, 2016. Chief sponsor was Senator Jenkins. What this resolution does is it encourages all cities to implement universal metering, including pressurized irrigation. And the premise here is that people sometimes don't understand how much water they're consuming unless it's metered and it can be quantified and they can be told. And this resolution says, hey, we really should be metering irrigation water as well as culinary water. All the cities right now do meter their culinary. There are a few cities who meter pressurized irrigation. But this, I think this is one of the first steps that the state is going to start looking at ways for cities to start metering irrigation water. Just wanted to bring this to your attention, and I thought that was really interesting. It's not a requirement yet, but in my opinion, water will become such an important resource, we will get to the point where cities will probably meter in the future. Irrigation water. Just want to let you know, our recreation programs are off and running. Our soccer leagues are clear full. Numbers have increased. Teen soccer is going well. We had a little bit decrease in the teen soccer. We went down to 5 teams versus the 6 we had last year. Right now, T-ball is open, and also a computer coding class is open, which should be a very popular class that will happen in June. So we did get an award from the Utah Jazz earlier this month, and we've got this award many times. This year we had 821 participants in our junior jazz program. Last year we had 770. And for a small community like us to be able to pull off a program that large is amazing. And just really want to give a shout out to the staff, to Greg and Laurie, and those that really helped out with getting that off and running. It's very successful. At the beginning of the year, we, as a city, we give out a free round of golf to every citizen. Just wanted to let you know that we've had 22 residents come in for their free round already this year. The golf course is in great shape. I hope our citizens take advantage of that and come in and have a good time. That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Zappala, do you have anything?
Yes. I wanted to first ask David when the computer coding class is.
It's in, I believe it's the first week in June.
Week right after Family Festival.
Yeah, so Family Festival is the 30th of May through, 31st. Or 31st through the June 4th.
Okay.
So the very next week, coding class.
And is there any age restriction?
Is it Daniel, do you want to go?
No, I'm just wondering if I can encourage my council members to go and learn to code because it's so fun.
Yeah, yeah. There's not an age restriction. You can come.
Okay. They prefer the younger kids. the first class beginners almost full.
Fantastic. Wonderful. Thank you. So I do have a number of things. First off, you're probably well aware I've been busy helping to revise our city zoning ordinances. We'll be talking about that today. On several other responsibilities, the Planning Commission met on the 26th of April, so that was last Tuesday. They had a very good discussion on the documents that you're going to see today, revisions to the general plan, revisions to our zoning ordinances for the commercial zone, revisions to the conditional use code. And as you'll see, as these documents come forward to us tonight, they were able to give their input and make some various changes to the documents and then recommended them to us for approval. The other issue that they talked about is that something that a number of residents have contacted me about as well, which is that Walmart has started storing various seasonal supplies for gardens outdoors. It's in their agreement with the city that they don't do that unless they apply for and receive a conditional use permit. And I believe our staff is trying to talk to them. I don't know if they have an update if they've reached them or not.
I've not been able to receive calls back,
though. So we're trying to figure out how to get that situation resolved. And then I also substituted for Jenny and attended the Parks and Trails Committee meeting. Unfortunately, only the chair of that committee was there that evening, as well as, was it Chandler that was there?
I was there.
Yes, I have a bad memory. Discussed primarily because we couldn't take any action, but just had some nice discussion about a service day and planning ideas for that day that's coming up on May 14th. There are various different locations around town where they're going to be doing some projects, and they look like they're going to be very good projects for our city. Talked about Yard of the Month prizes, and also talked about lighting at the Christmas lighting at the roundabout and finding ways to improve the looks of that. So that's all I have.
That's all you have. Mr. Bailey.
The only thing I have is that we are in the middle of the open burn season. It goes through the end of this month. Anybody's allowed to burn, they just need to make sure that they get a burn permit, which are free. So that's all I've got. Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Crawley, do you have anything?
I have nothing today.
Thank you. We had a finance committee meeting. I'm going to let Charles handle all that discussion out tonight when we adopt a preliminary budget. Can't remember, Daniel, did you talk about Lone Peak Public Safety?
Oh, I forgot.
Okay, I will talk about it then. So at our last Lone Peak Public Safety meeting, we did adopt a preliminary budget. And so with the proviso that we come back in 2 weeks, which we were going to meet on Friday the 13th of May, Highland City would like to discuss changing the way that the cities are charged for their fire and EMS services. This is an important issue. As soon as we know more, I will let you know more. Mr. Geddes, do you have anything?
I would like to ask Councilman Bailey. I had heard, it seemed like I read in the paper that open burns were banned this year from in Cedar Hills. And
in Cedar Hills?
In county and all over North Shasta County. But is that not correct?
No, that's not correct. So the burn season is governed by the EPA, and they direct the state, and the state directs the counties. And so, I mean,
so where would I pick up a burn permit?
I believe that online. Do we have a thing online on our website that
we'll check that? We'll make sure it's online.
If not,
a link.
There should be a link on that. If not, Highland's got a link, and
okay.
We just basically need to know the address in case
right.
something comes in.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Thanks. Anything else?
No.
Mrs. Reese, you have anything?
Just that Family Festival is in 3 weeks.
And you need volunteers.
And we still need a lot of volunteers. So please sign up and encourage your neighbors too. On the food night on Friday, which is the dinner and movie, the council is, we always help serve dinner that night. We'll probably rotate a little bit instead of having six people all serving dessert, because it always seems like
we're tight
and it stops. We'll have two people that will rotate and help Melissa Willie with the other volunteer work that she needs done that night. So we'll just take turns rotating that night. But there's a lot of fun activities. You guys, I think, have
okay.
all attended them in the past, and so you know that. And then, as Daniel said, the service day is on May 14th, which is 2 weeks before that. We also need volunteers for that, so just share the word. I did post it to the Cedar Hills Facebook page today, so you can like it and share it.
Okay. Mr. Shaw, you have anything?
No, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's move on to scheduled items. And so item number 14 has been moved up to the top, which is a discussion of the city's participation in the Utah League of Cities and Towns. I've invited the executive director of the league, Ken Bullock, to be here. I thought what I'd do, Mr. Bullock, is let Mr. Crawley, because you wanted this on the agenda.
Yes.
So why don't you lead out a discussion in terms of what your thoughts are. I read your blog. I know you've got some strong thoughts. So why don't you take some time. Go ahead.
Okay. So I hadn't been to too many meetings. Actually, I hadn't been to any meetings till last summer, and decided I'd go to a Utah League of Cities and Towns meeting. And you know, I've heard about it being good for training, and I believe that there is good training there, and I went to some of the classes and felt that it was beneficial to go to some of the meetings and get the training. What concerned me, though, was in one meeting where it was discussed that that the Utah League of Cities and Towns was promoting the gas tax, and whoever was the speaker then, I can't remember at this point, made the statement that the gas tax didn't look like it was going to pass, but because of the Utah League of Cities and Towns effort, that this tax passed, and everyone kind of stood and gave a standing ovation. What it appeared to me is that the Utah League of Cities and Towns was trying to influence the voters how to vote, and in particular to raise the gas tax. And the part that once I started thinking through it, I thought, okay, so let's go back to the basics of government and what the purpose is and how it works. The residents in my area, they hire me to represent them, and most of them want me to be efficient with our money and do as much as we can with as little money as possible. You know, if we can keep the taxes low, that's exactly what they want, if we can be more efficient. And so, you know, I'm very conservative, and as are a lot of the people that serve with me, and a lot of residents voted for us because they believe that. Yet then we go and spend the money that they give us to a group that appears to be a lobbying group whose main focus this past year seemed to be to get taxes raised on these residents. And so it just seemed really backwards that I'm paying the money my residents are giving me to get someone to lobby to them to raise taxes and taking credit for the state raising taxes on them. And then they went into how we're going to also get Proposition 1 passed in each county, and here's what you need to do it. You go to the residents, and you go to blogs, you email, and do all these things to tell your residents how to vote, which my job isn't to tell my residents how to vote. It's to listen to them and take a direction from them on how I should vote. And I honestly felt sick to my stomach that this appeared to me to be what's wrong with politics, that we don't take direction from the ones that are hiring us. We try to give direction to the ones that are hiring us. And anyway, that put a bad taste in my mouth. I went to the Utah League of Cities and Towns website and saw there's a lot of corporate sponsors. So the the ULCT gets about $1.5 million from of its fees that it runs on from the different cities that contribute to them, and then also gets corporate sponsors and things like that. And when I talk to learn more and more about the group, they're viewed as one of the most powerful lobbying groups in Utah, yet I hear from at least the people I trust in politics that they're not necessarily conservative, which means they wouldn't really lobby for things that people in my area would be represented by. And other people said, you know, they really are out of touch with Utah County issues. They push for more money for UTA, which really doesn't affect us in Cedar Hills at all, since we don't have any buses that go here. A lot of the taxes that went increased were proposing and put money to UTA. And so I just feel like we're not represented by ULCT here. And I said, well, why not just take the $5,000 and put it to one of our local community groups that does a lot of really good things here. We have a Parks and Trails Beautification Committee that takes a very small budget each year and does more good in bringing the community together with that small budget. And it might only be $3,000 or $4,000 some years. Why not give some of this money to them and promote local instead of promoting an agenda that seems to be from up north? That's my concern. I have more questions, but I just want to kind of open up with that.
Okay. Thank you very much. So this is not a debate.
Right.
But I wanted you to be able to say what you wanted to say.
Uh-huh.
And Mr. Bullock is here from the league, and I wanted him to be able to express his thoughts as well. So we're going to give the time to him now.
Great. Mm-hmm.
And then council can ask her any questions after.
Thank you very much, Mayor. And first, let me say what a privilege it is. I enjoy coming to city councils and thanking you for your service. I've been at my employment now for 31 years, and I've watched the sacrifices that everyone here makes. It took me way too long to realize in my tenure, and probably took me about 10 years to put it in context of the sacrifices that are expected of you from your family, your businesses, and then your community service. And I think it's very appropriate that everyone recognize that. Secondly, I would like to thank Mayor Gigi. I think all of you know he's on the league's board of directors, and he does a wonderful job representing you and the communities in this area. We were walking in, we were talking just very cursory about issues, and water came to the forefront very quickly. And we had a meeting, I think two board meetings ago, in which we were the president of the organization, Lynn Pace, wanted to talk about future issues, and very quickly the mayor's hand up went up and talked about water and the cost of it and the delivery of it. So just know that Mayor Gigi is raising your issues. I have absolutely no qualms with any questions that you might have to ask me. If I can't answer them, I think there's a problem that I have. And I feel very accountable to you in every one of your questions. I think there are some clarifications that I would like to give you, Representative Crawley. Was there probably some, if I forget something, please bring me back to it. Your first issue about coming to the conferences and the training. We work very hard to make sure that the training is applicable to everyone and has application for Cedar Hills, to Provo, to Orem, to Saratoga Springs. I mean, we have four very different types of communities there, and it's difficult to try and get something that has application for everyone. But we try very hard, and thank you for acknowledging that. Secondly, if there was some enthusiasm at probably the business session that you were referencing, where we come together, talk about the situations and the circumstances we dealt with the legislature, giving you a report on that, as well as getting direction from you. If there was some enthusiasm for the gas tax, I'm not apologetic of that. The 17 years is the last time that the gas tax was passed, and I was part of that with then Speaker Marty Stevens. And 17 years of losing cost of inflation, cost of materials, growth, I think Cedar Hills received approximately, and David could correct me, about a 20% increase in revenue from your B&C funds. at least our review, and I certainly won't question your recollection of it because it's you're the ones who have to deal with it, but I think you as a city spent about $480,000 over and above what you got in B and C funds last year. So to have an additional $50,000 to add to your road budget, I think would be a good thing. To clarify for you, Representative, there is no money that goes to UTA from the gas tax. The gas tax is imposed by this legislature. Yes, the league lobbied for it. Yes,
it's more Proposition 1 that has
that. Yeah, and I'll get to that. I just wanted to make sure that since you had raised that, I wanted to make sure that I was clear on what we were trying to do. So the gas tax imposed by the legislature, yes, did we support it? Yes, do I feel like we helped get it over the hump? Absolutely. And I feel that was a significant accomplishment for communities. Is it fun to raise taxes? I don't know of any elected official, and I don't know of any legislator that was just going, yeah, great, let's do this. But there is a situation when I think we're at cross purposes sometimes when we say, well, we can't ever raise taxes when it costs money to provide services. And it had been 17 years. And there is a recognition by the governor, the legislature, cities, counties, that its time was due. And do I feel we were a significant part of that? Yes. And I think every community in the state is the beneficiary of it. There are some limitations in there that I think you need to be aware of. It was required that the money spent had to be spent on roads. It could not supplement your general fund. So if you get $50,000 in, you don't get to say, oh, great, I don't have to spend this. It's like, no. There was very clear direction and agreed upon by the legislature and us saying taxes had to go for what the purpose was dedicated for, which I think is exactly what constituents would expect you to do. If you're going to raise the gas tax, it should be spent on roads. On Proposition 1, I think if you checked with anyone, and I mean anyone in the state, there is probably no more formidable and definitive and defiant opponent of what UTA has done in the past than myself. I was exceptionally critical and very vocal about it to the point that the chairman of the board and current Speaker of the House he and I were exceptionally close friends long before he became Speaker. And it had a very detrimental effect on our relationship because I feel that UTA in some of its past dealings has not always been forthright in how they dealt with communities. I believe the Speaker has, when he was chairman, was spending an enormous amount of his time and political capital trying to change that course correction with that, as well as the, shall we say, the culture of UTA. I know the current chairman, former LDS Bishop Burton, is doing the same thing. The Speaker and I had breakfast this morning, and we had numerous conversations during the course of the discussions on Prop 1 during the legislature of having it just go to the cities. And I had a whole strategy implemented or presented to folks, and I felt like it should be given to the cities. The cities then could, you know, be able to meet with their transportation needs until UTA had be able to come up with a better strategic plan of how they could benefit all communities. That was not to be. People didn't want to buy into that. So to say we were promoting for UTA is inaccurate, because I think, as I said, anyone at the legislature could tell you that I'm more than comfortable stating my opinion about that. That's not to say, and I do believe that with Speaker Hughes and current Chairman Burton, they are doing a significant amount of investment in time and energy and meetings and changing policies to make sure that there is a greater comfort level with residents in your county, in your community, and throughout their district, and policies are much more transparent than they have ever been. So we were not proponents of UTA getting any money. As it relates to promoting Prop 1. Mm-hmm. It's in state statute very clearly that it is not, we are not in a position, nor you as a city, independently, yes, you can be proponents for tax increases like that, expending city money, et cetera. Did we ask communities to pass resolutions? Absolutely. We drafted it. We put it online. Everything that we have done is transparent. It's on the league's website, so anyone can access that. But that's where it stopped. I think what you're referring to is Lane Beatty, the director of the Salt Lake Chamber of Commerce, came, and they were explaining to the general membership who were in attendance at the business session, here's what the chamber is going to be doing. As I was sitting listening to you, it's like, yeah, I can see how people could get that confused. If they didn't know who he was, he's a former Senate president. He's been with the chamber about 20 years now. And was he more than enthused? Yes. No question about that. Did we encourage communities to pass resolutions? Yes. The intent for us as an organization is to help you provide information for you so that you can give your residents a more accurate picture of what's going on from a state level. How it affects your community, what you want to tell them is your prerogative. That is not us to parrot for you what you want to tell your residents. I think it became abundantly clear, and it was a very easy decision for legislators and for league officials that there was a referendum component to anything tied to Prop 1. They wanted residents to make those decisions. Some counties passed it, some did not. Salt Lake rejected it, Weber County passed it, Davis County passed it, you guys in Utah County didn't pass it. Not a single dollar or energy of anyone's time was spent promoting Prop 1. Now, does that mean there aren't individual council members, mayors, things like that that spent their own time? Absolutely. I don't think there's any question about that. I was in a meeting with Salt Lake County mayors last week, and one of the questions was, okay, it passed in Salt Lake County. What are we going to do now? You know, how do we resurrect it? And there's challenges to that. I don't think there's, I think, any delusions that it still has a number of critics to it. But that's for, you know, the elected officials to determine. I think those were most of your points, Councilman Crawley. If I didn't address them, I apologize. I'd be happy to.
Mr. Crawley, was there anything else that you wanted addressed?
Yeah, I have a few questions for you. Like, one of the questions I have is, does the ULCT contribute to any campaigns?
No.
Okay.
Have no funds, no monies to do things like that.
And then what kind of there's a lot of accounts that I just couldn't really understand. It's because I don't know the league that well, but uh-huh. What kinds of things, like there's a few accounts that I asked Michelle about in your office, and one of them, I'll just read them and just kind of give me a general idea of what these okay. accounts are used for. Consultations and honorariums.
I don't remember having anything. Are you talking about speakers, speaker fees, and honorariums?
Oh, okay. So that's bringing speakers in.
Yeah, and they're folks that we have come and speak at conferences, our local officials' day, uh-huh. to the conferences in September, April, et cetera.
Uh-huh. And then municipal task force. What does that do?
It's trying to figure out one of the challenges. I think that. As communities where I don't feel like we're prepared for it, because I don't think businesses or anyone's prepared for it, is the changing dynamics of what's going on in our society. We have an enormous amount of disruptive technology that's occurring. And how does that affect the funding of local government? I'll give you a perfect example is remote car sales. Okay, currently we have a sales tax distribution formula that's 50% population, 50% point of sale. Well, you have Tesla, which wants to come into the market in Utah, and their purchases are not through a dealership. They're made online. So where is that sales tax credited for the purchase? And some folks feel like it should be the zip code in which it's purchased. Some feel like that's exceptionally counterproductive and counter to what the current system is, that you have a franchise, you have a business, you have an address that's in a particular city, and that's where the sales should go. So it's trying to figure out those types of issues of how do we fund local government in the future.
So I guess my question is, where does that money go? The municipal task force, like, what do you spend your money on?
It's on an individual, Roger Tube. He's a former tax commissioner.
Oh, okay.
He worked for the Legislative Research and General Counsel and was an attorney there, then became a tax commissioner for a decade or so. When he retired, I wanted to take advantage of his unique set of skills.
So it's just got consulting fees to him, basically. Okay. And what's his goal in that?
Our goal is just to
find out
how do we figure this is not something that just happens overnight. There's a lot of people to bring along, cities, counties, legislators turn over, city officials turn over. Mm-hmm. How do you get a baseline of where do we want to go with society changing almost month or semi-annually now, it seems like.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you. And then the next question, I was told that you had 6 to 10 full-time employees somewhere in there.
We have, about that.
So my question was, how does travel and per diem get as high as $68,000 for the year?
Speakers in part.
Oh, okay, so it's bringing speakers in.
Speakers charge you, sometimes they charge you in the fee itself, and some have outside fees that you accommodate for. We also have, like in April, we were just down in St. George. You may not be aware of this, but most local government in some fashion or another lives in St. George in the month of April. Yes. City managers meet, the city attorneys meet, the city recorders meet. We meet with our conference. We have a conference called Road School that some of you may have attended or your public works at. So some of that is fairly costly for us to go down and be there for 3 or 4 days.
And then the other question I have is there any, so what I've heard from a lot of people I've talked to about the ULCT is that it's in the top five as far as the power as a lobbyist group, you know. So is there some sort of standards or principles that ULCT stands for, where would I find those?
I will get you, they should be on the webpage where it talks about missions and mission statement and values. Mm-hmm. If it's not, I'll get those to you. Okay. But also as it relates to standards, I think it's very consistent that no one in the office, we had an issue that the mayor is aware of the last couple of years where a full-time employee who had some outside consulting work, and we terminated that. So everyone who works full-time for the league is dedicated to the league, and it's been representing its cities. Roger, too. We have Roger and Jody Hoffman, primarily, who are outside counsel, who have some very specific skills. As I mentioned, Roger is a former tax commissioner and also worked for the Tax Review Commission. And then Jody Hoffman has a very keen understanding and knowledge of land use law. Yeah. And those are two who are outside. And we have an arrangement where there's an approval process we go through to if they do outside counsel or outside work.
Okay, I'm almost done, and I have just one more comment. That is, when I became on city council, one of my main goals is to represent the people and, you know, keep taxes low, keep spending low, keep our debt low as a city. But, you know, sometimes governments get a life of their own and they forget what the residents want. They think, okay, we need to gather more income in so we can do more as a city. Which might be contrary to why they were hired. And it seems like this, the Utah League of Cities and Towns, is kind of an extension of that desire of cities to grow, to get more money within them. You know, and that's just kind of a general feeling, general conversation there. Oh, yeah, we want more money for the cities. You know, and so it does seem like the Utah League is counter what the residents want, while at the same time being for what a lot of the representatives want. And I think the longer we as representatives are part of government, part of leadership of government, the more it's hard for us to remember, wait, our goal is not to increase revenue for cities, which means take more money from the people. Our goal is to be as efficient as possible with as little money as possible. So it seems like, to me, still in thinking that the ULCT is more of an extension of the bad side of government, per se. I don't have any problem with meetings to get to know how to run cities better and talk. You know, the meetings, I have no problem with that part. It's the lobbying and the pushing for laws that increase taxes that really turns me off to it. So anyway, I think it's great that we get together with other people that are leaders of different cities and compare notes and share ideas and things like that, especially the city managers and the public works department and those groups that really could learn from each other. That's great. It's the lobbying, it's the pushing for certain laws, it's the writing resolutions to raise taxes. That's the part that turns me off. So anyway, that's about all I have to say.
If I could, Mayor, if I could just respond to one thing that you mentioned, Councilman. Yep. Taxes and where do we get them, how do we use them? I couldn't agree with you more. As I said, I think the economy is taking a significant shift. If I may just indulge you for a moment, I've been coming down to this area of Utah County for 40 years. My wife's grandmother owned the burnt orange house that you see on the Highland Alpine exit. It used to be Joe Lambert's Cafe. And he had some farmland there, and then they had some farmland where Cabela's was. And I've seen the change, and it's been astonishing to see what has occurred. Well, with growth, and people want growth, businesses want growth, growth is what most people are looking for in whatever form. Is government looking to grow its revenues? I think it's fair to say yes. But I don't think that's my responsibility to say what you can and can't do. I think it's incumbent upon you as elected officials to represent your constituents the way that you feel that what they're asking for. Now, here's the interesting twist on it, and here's a change that's coming, and we've talked about it with David down at the city managers, and we're going to talk about it next week if Mr. Shaw is down with the city attorneys. We've gone from, in my tenure with the league, that the sales tax was the primary source, property tax was something that people didn't like, and there was statutes passed so that it made it difficult to pass property tax increases on. And then you had franchise fees. Some communities, there's actually a significant number of communities who don't impose the maximum on that. Well, what was hidden in there were fees. And with technology and growth and a whole set of circumstances that maybe it's a little bit of a perfect storm, but I would attribute most of it to technology and transparency. Fees are not something that you can just willy-nilly pass on to people. People want accountability for that. People want fees to be paid for the exact services that are rendered for it. You can have a cost recovery, but you can't make revenue on that. And that's where a lot of communities have been. Some communities were overly dependent on impact fees. Growth communities, particularly. That's not my business to do that. But what I can tell you is that what is happening is fees are going to get really, really ratcheted down. You're going to have a lot more accountability for how fees are assessed and what they're used for, whether it's growth-related, water-related, you name it. That's going to have a significant impact on you. You have remote sales tax, online sales tax, and that's going to have a dramatic impact on revenue that's generated to you. Your Walmart. I think I'm probably one of the few people in the state that's never purchased anything on Amazon. I'm going to, just so it's like, well, what's this experience? That's not something I do. Well, there was a bill introduced last year that has an impact on state and local government, and the range is between $60 and $300 million. They don't know, and it's going to just grow exponentially. Well, that's going to have an impact on money that's distributed to you. We had some residents who came or constituents of primarily this county. They were in the southern part of the county that came and said, well, we don't want you to do that because, you know, it has an impact on our business. We don't want you to have to require us to pay sales tax. Well, you know, it is the law to pay sales tax on purchases. But you have a growing trend of people who think services don't cost money. And we've become so accustomed to how convenient you have made your services to residents. When you get up in the morning, you turn the water on, you flush the toilet, you turn the light on, it snows, you remove it, you got a fire, as you're talking about, you want to be put out if something happens. On Wednesdays, I want my garbage picked up. Well, all of these things cost money. And the alternative that is coming in the decisions that are going to be made is, okay, we don't want to pay more taxes. Not a problem. But, you know, where's the revenue going to come from? You can decrease the services or you can increase the revenues. And that's not a decision for us. That's something that we do. We take our direction from you as members of the organization and tell us what you want us to do.
So what are the top, if you were to say the top three kind of goals or initiatives or things that the ULCT is going to be working on this year, what would you say there?
You mentioned it, and I'm sorry, you're...
Daniel.
Daniel. Land use planning. Growth is coming faster than, and you guys know this, not everybody does. It's how are we current with our ordinances and land use planning or general plan. That's going to be a huge issue. We had a 2.5-hour meeting today with the development community and city officials over land use planning and the frustration of the development community who are saying that communities are not prepared to make quicker decisions and they're not current in state statute on land use. Working with them would be one. The second one is water and infrastructure funding for that. How and when would we go about that? And then one that no one wants to talk about is justice court reform. With growth comes some of the more unpleasant aspects of a growing population is you have potentially more criminals, and how do you deal with that in the justice system, and where do you incarcerate them if you incarcerate them, and how do you pay for all of that? Transportation is not going to go away. I can tell you, and I think most of you are acquainted with a bill that was passed. It's called the Silicon Slopes Transportation Study Committee. That is looking at this general area, especially down at the intersection or the off-ramp section by the freeway. And how do you deal with all the funding and transportation needs as it relates to, we want businesses to come, we want this to be a high-tech area, and with that, how do we balance the needs of transportation with air quality, et cetera. I'm sorry for going on and on. I don't mean to put everyone to sleep.
Mr. Colley, you have any more questions?
Nope. Thank you.
You wanted to ask a question?
Absolutely.
Absolutely?
Absolutely. I always have questions.
Go ahead.
I wanted to ask you a few follow-up questions on this discussion
Sure.
we've had. One of the things that Councilmember Crowley stated in his blog post on his opinion on this issue is he used the phrase, quote, the ULCT is, quote, a self-appointed elite group of city leaders. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to ask you, who are the members of ULCT that serve on the board and serve on various committees?
There's, okay. 246 cities and towns in the state. All of them participate. It's a voluntary basis. It's dues assessed. It's the same formula that applies to everyone, whether you're Stockton or Scipio to Salt Lake to you. It's assessed valuation, population, and sales tax. It's a percentage, and David can get you that exact formula. How the board is selected is through a nomination process. Applications and information goes out to everyone through a newsletter that we'll be sending out probably in the next month. We have a nominations committee that you are invited to recommend and nominate people to sit on. We have to have representation from, the state is broken down into 8 different areas, so you have representation from Blanding and Moab, as well as Vernal and Tooele and the Wasatch Front. There's 2 representative, I'd have to go back and look at who those representative are, but they should be on the web page. We have to have a representative from a town by the Constitution. So you make sure that a small town's perspective is selected. It's a 2-year appointment, and they meet, the nomination committee meets in September And like I said, everyone has an opportunity to recommend or sit on it, but they have to do something. I don't think you want me going out recruiting people to be on certain committees so that they can select certain individuals.
Right. So when Councilmember Crowley has tried to characterize the ULCT as somehow being in favor of growing, ever-growing governments, I think what we're characterizing this is somehow we've managed to get a bunch of elected leaders from broadly representing communities across the state, and somehow the ones that are selected in this nominating process to serve on ULCT all are in favor of bigger government here in Utah.
Yeah.
I think that's what I heard.
I don't think I said that, but I did say that they generally
the
are
mission.
Looking for, are pushing for more.
I didn't know if you felt that was accurate.
Not in the least. I can tell you, Mayor Cox, that Mayor Gigi knows from Hyde Park, Cache County is a pretty conservative place. I think it has a good balance of people who have very differing points of view, and I think that's a very healthy thing. It's like with you, council member, I think it's very good. I think you're doing, you're fulfilling your responsibilities. I have no problems you asking any questions, but you know, doesn't mean that that's where everyone's at. And I think the mayor would tell you that there's a good cross-section on the board, and in our legislative policy, it's one of the things that's a real challenge, and I will acknowledge to you is, you guys all have other responsibilities, whatever they may be, and whether it's in the city, and then let's add it on to, okay, here's the statewide agendas that you have interest in. How do I keep you informed? So we've tried to do a better job and come up with better ways to keep you informed via the social media. Sometimes, and I won't state this doesn't happen, if I don't get feedback from you on, okay, where do we go? Or, you know, you telling me, I think I'm derelict in my duties to say, okay, here are these issues that are out in front of us. Where do you want to go? And I will do that. And I think it's my responsibility, and I think you expect that of me. Once I put it out there, it's your responsibility to then tell me. I can't do that. But I am going to tell you, here are these issues that are pending in front of you if you don't, you know, tell me what's a priority for you.
He also said on his blog that all it takes is one donation from a group like UTA to ULCT, and the whole state political system is tainted. I'm wondering if you've ever received a donation from UTA.
No, in fact, they are statutorily, well, let me rephrase that. Probably about 20 years ago, they helped us with some busing issues on our local officials' day at the Capitol. Then the legislature passed a statute that where they couldn't give services away. And so we also got some complaints from LaBus, and we felt like, yep, that's fair. So we don't take anything from them, and we actually contract with private bus businesses
okay.
for services.
And then I also wanted to get your opinion from the point of view of ULCT. The fight over Prop 1, especially here in Utah County, was very much a fight for and against the role that public transportation would have in our future as a county.
Mm-hmm.
The Utah Foundation has said that our population is going to double in the next 20 to 25 years. So I'm wondering, from the perspective of ULCT, what they feel the role of public transportation is going to have to meet our transportation needs over the next 25 years.
I can tell you that it's going to be a component of it. How much it is in every county and each community, I think, is going to be predicated on how you view it and how you coalesce around your neighboring communities or your county and UTA. Whether we like UTA or not, and I can tell you definitively with Speaker Hughes and Chairman
Burton,
yes, they have started and are changing the culture. Are there things that need to change there? Yeah. Are they going to be a service provider? Yep. You won't see another agency like UTA. Now, how they are governed, who governs them, that may be a different issue. You've had a number of discussions over the years of bringing them in under the Utah Department of Transportation. That may be something that happens. Or maybe there were some discussions last year where maybe UDOT does the engineering and the construction stuff, which is what they do well, They don't run a train and a bus service. So there might be a bifurcation of some of those responsibilities. But is UTA part of the future transportation plans? Absolutely. But I think there's also a significant part that deals with what I'll call active lifestyles, and the mayor's heard me talk about this. It's not active transportation, it's an active lifestyle of us walking, hiking, biking, doing more of those types of things. I am a member of the predominant faith in the state. And during the course of this conversation over the last number of years, I got thinking about the number of buildings there are for the predominant faith. I live within five blocks of my church. I went and counted. There's 268 parking stalls in my neighborhood church to be used approximately 4 hours for one day. When I grew up, I walked to elementary school. I walked to every school, elementary, junior high school, and college. And I walked to the grocery store, rode my bike, and then I walked to church. I live eight blocks from where I grew up, and I don't do this anymore, I want to be clear, but I found myself driving five blocks to church, five blocks to the grocery store, and across the street from my grocery store is the gymnasium that I work out in. And there's a little irony to that. And as I started to walk and ride my bike, I found I was the only one doing that. So that kind of culture is what is going to not only be required, I think, of us, to deal with air quality and keeping taxes low. Walking someplace is pretty easy. We just, get too convenient or too complacent about time. And I was chatting with President Niederhauser about this. I think you would find this interesting. He told me, he lives in Sandy, that some of his fondest memories with his daughter was walking to and from church on Sunday. And he's done it rain or shine for X number of years. Yeah, there's a lot of good things that come from just being active instead of getting in a car. Where there's circulators that take you down to the front runner, all those kinds of things. That's not my role, but I think those kinds of things need to be put on the table and things that you have a right to expect for discussions with UTA.
Daniel, do you have any more questions?
No, that's good. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Did you want to say something?
I would just say I do appreciate Rob bringing it up because I think it's always a good question to ask anything in our budget, right? Does it make sense for our city to continue to do it, and what benefits do our residents receive? So I appreciate having the discussion. Just to share my thoughts, I feel that we do receive a benefit from being a member of ULCT. I've gone to their trainings every year, and I'm sure it's difficult, like you said, to organize trainings that benefit a city our size versus Salt Lake, but I think you guys have done a good job with that. Whenever I've reached out to ULCT with questions, everyone I've reached out to has responded promptly and has been willing to listen to the concerns that I have as an elected official with a small community. I think that I like that we have access to a lot of resources that we wouldn't otherwise have, whether that's land use authorities or municipal law or the things that you guys can specialize in that would be expensive for us to try to do on our own. So that's helpful as well. And I would just say from the council perspective, I'm sure that your legislative policy committee has a lot of influence on what direction you guys are taking at the legislative session. And right now, Mayor Gigi serves on that, but we only have one representative. And I think a lot of other cities have three or four representatives, whether it's additional council members and city managers. And so I think from a council perspective or from a staff perspective, if we want to have more influence on ULCT, it would make sense for us to then have more people sitting on that legislative policy committee. So I'm happy to participate. I think it's on Mondays, right?
Mondays during it's the third Monday of the month for the most part from June. We take July off because everyone's doing their city celebrations. August, September, we meet in the during the conference. And so it's typically the third Monday, and then during the legislative session, it's every Monday.
It's every Monday. So if the council's interested, like I said, I'm happy to be a part of the legislative policy committee as a Cedar Hills representative if the council wants me to. I think David has the option to be and another council member. We can have two council members. So if that's something that we feel like we want to have more influence and say in ULCT, then I would think that we should step up and participate more on that policy committee.
And we can definitely talk about that. Mike, did you have anything you wanted to add?
I just want to say thank you for coming. You've educated me tonight, and I've never really participated in anything, so I look forward to attending some things.
Wonderful. I'm sorry for taking so much time. I get a little enthused about telling you what we're doing and how we do it. So thank you, Mayor. And
appreciate you being here, Ken. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming, too.
Thanks,
I know you took time out of your night with family and whatnot, so I appreciate you coming down.
You do the same thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let's move on to our scheduled items now. Item number 9, which is an action item on the amendment to the general plan of the city of Cedar Hills.
Mayor, just real quick, Mr. Shaw had a family issue come up and he had to leave.
Right, he texted me.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Goodwin, I think you're presenting. Go right ahead.
Tonight we're looking at just the general plan, or the land use element of the city's general plan, and looking at the changes that the Planning Commission had proposed. They took a look at this document last Tuesday night and made some minor adjustments. I don't know that they really made any major changes. However, we didn't make any major changes to begin with in the proposal to the Planning Commission. Let me just go over a few of the changes. In the introduction, we updated the city code. Utah State Code 10-9-302-2A is no longer valid. The new code outlining the purpose of the land use is found in 10-9A-403, so we updated the city code there. Planning Commission struck the sentence in the second paragraph of purpose of the land use element to eliminate the competition between public entities and in attracting development. Minor changes were made throughout the document, changing the word town to city. And then in number 4, or in a couple of space spots, the word geographic was changed to geological hazards. The major changes that we proposed, and I don't believe that they're very major at all, was in Chapter 1, beginning in Chapter 1, we started updating the zones. The previous document showed that there was an R1 10,000, an R1 20,000, a rural agricultural zone, and a hillside zone, and as well as the shopping center zone. We changed R1 10,000 to reflect the city's current zoning of R1 11,000, changed the language in that section, added R1 15,000, which is an established zone within the city. And there still needs to be language added in PR 2.2 planned residential zone and PR 3.4 land residential zone. The language that you see in your document that is related to the R1 15,000 zone is straight from the code. It's the legislative intent of the code of that zone. That language is taken and incorporated into the general plan as that's the vision of the zone. And the same thing will be done in PR 2.2 and PR 3.4. The rural agricultural zone was struck as that zone is not to be found within the city any longer. And then the language in the shopping center zone, or the SC1 zone, which is the purpose of the whole design guideline moratorium, that remains intact. We didn't make any changes to that. Additionally, the town site residential zone and the public facilities zone were both added as well into Chapter 1. In Chapter 2...
Real quick, where is the town site residential?
Town site residential zone is actually the Cedars West.
Okay.
Yeah, good question. In Chapter 2, they start listing densities throughout the city, and so there's a discussion on low density, medium density, and high density. And after a meeting with Councilmember Zapala, we felt that the city didn't really look at these densities over the years as they were approving developments. The city was, based on the general plan, I believe, was meant to be an acre to half acre lots, very small town fill, whereas right now, I would say that most of the city is in between the medium density, which is 2 units per acre, which is actually a very small portion of the city, but the majority of the city is actually what would be considered high density by the old standards of the old general plan, which is 3 to 4 units per acre, about 10,000 square feet. So if you look at a zoning map, you'll see that a lot of the city is zoned in the R1 11,000 zone, which is, according to the old document, high density. Very high density, it shows that there's some language there for that, which the Planning Commission actually recommends striking. And then in the commercial zone, the Planning Commission, we changed the language discussing where the commercial zone was located. There was a sentence there that says that the district will be located in two areas of the community, one on the western side of Cedar Hills adjacent to the SC1 zone and the other near the intersection of Canyon Drive and SR92. It was the feeling of the Planning Commission that that sentence be struck, limiting commercial, and it's not zoned commercial either, along Canyon Road. And that's something for this body to discuss. The other major change that they had was there was an economic element found in the old general plan. Planning Commission recommended that that be struck, and as...
Where is this? What page?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Where is this sort of thing at?
The economic element.
Oh.
The Planning Commission recommended that the economic element be struck completely. It outlines some goals which are actually found in the design requirements that were being proposed. There was nothing unique other than that the city would propose studies or economic development studies to look into how to best develop the city's shopping center zone. So there weren't really any changes. It was really more of an update as far as the general plan is concerned. So with that being said, are there any questions as you've read through this document that have come up?
Not for me.
Council members?
Nope.
Okay. Before we make a motion, I would like to thank Mr. Driggs and the Planning Commission for doing some work on this document and getting it ready before it came to us. I'd like to thank the council members that were involved with this. It did have legal review, and it's had significant reviews by a Thursday night group that got together and discussed these things on a regular basis. So are you wanting to make a motion, or are you just getting close to your microphone?
I'm just getting close to my microphone.
Okay. All right. Very good. Does anyone have any questions? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I think the only comment I'll make is that we need to be sure to revisit this on a more regular basis than we have.
I actually think that it's going to be revisited here in the next few months as we look at, as we've removed the density requirements from Chapter 2 of the land use element. I think that the discussion needs to be had about how the city really is. It needs to incorporate how the city actually is in its existence.
So we probably need an ad hoc committee established to look at the general plan and make those. I mean, I know we have a committee that had been somewhat functioning.
I think
just had three or four dedicated individuals who know how to write a general plan, I think it really needs another go through.
Yeah. This is really the genesis of this general plan was that we have the zoning moratorium and we wanted the general plan to reflect any changes in the SC1 zone, which the general plan actually really still reflects, I feel like the old general plan reflects what the current document is trying to get at.
Yeah.
So that's why there's not very many changes in the SC1 zone.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Again?
I move that we approve Resolution 5-3-2016A, a resolution adopting amendments to the city's general plan, land use element, subject with no changes.
Very good. I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Was that Mr. Zappala?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Let's have a roll call vote starting from my right. Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Mr. Geddes?
Aye.
Mr. Crawley?
Aye.
Mr. Bailey?
Aye.
Mr. Zappala?
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Probably stand right where you are, Mr. Goodwin. Moving on to our next action item, which is to the City Code Title 10, Chapter 6, related to planned commercial development projects. Go right ahead.
Yes, as we've discussed in the past, we're taking the old design guidelines, making them requirements, and putting them in City Code. This will replace completely Title 10, 6A, which is planned commercial developments, which is where the old conditional use table was found. So with that being said, I know you've had the chance to review this document on a number of occasions, and Councilmember Zappala has worked very hard on this, and I think we have a pretty good draft here, and I hope it's near its final form. But the zone, just to keep in mind that the zoning moratorium does expire on May 17th, so while it is noticed as a review action tonight, pending changes, it could come back on May 17th, but let's have a discussion about what needs to change. So I don't know that anything else to add to that.
Okay. Council members, questions?
I do have some questions, actually.
Go right ahead.
Surprisingly, after all we've been through.
I was going to say, wait, you wrote it.
So one of the, I think the main question I have centers on the map that we have included. And this is a map that is very low quality since I drew it. And what I wanted to kind of ascertain was, where is the official zone map? How is that incorporated into our code? How do we direct people to say, like, this is the official document, and it's got the meets and bounds and parcel boundaries and all that good stuff?
I don't know that it has meets and bounds parcel descriptions, but in the code book, if you had a physical book in front of you, if you turned open to Title 10, you'd see it right there on your first page.
Is it not in the online version?
I've never seen it in the online version.
So maybe that would be one reason I need to carry around a book instead of electronic version.
Found one. Okay. There you go.
Or maybe I'll excerpt
that. But it is in need of being revised already.
So can we specify in a resolution we make today that we'll make according adjustments in the official map?
You would need to, yes.
So that it reflects the general idea that's shown in the diagram.
And we'll need to probably get with, I believe it would probably be Bowen and Collins that would come out and do the redo that map for us. I don't know who would do that.
Okay. Because that includes, that includes not just the boundary change between some of the districts, but also we've designated the public facility zone to cover the drainage area in one place.
There was a zone change that was performed like 6 months, 5 to 6 months ago, where we moved homes from the R1 20,000 to the R1 15,000. That still needs to be reflected in the land use map for the citywide. And it might be helpful to break out the sub-districts in the commercial zone rather than listing it all as SC1, but to have a map of its own, like what you've got here, but maybe a little more detailed.
Yeah. And then I actually got one public comment on my blog post about this that was very helpful. They noticed that I had drawn the yellow boundary for the office too far south, and it actually covers some homes. And so I can update that and fix that. The other thing that I wanted to be sure that we specify here, which I notice is not specified yet, is when we say that there are conditional uses in the zone, we should specify that the city council is the land use authority for those conditional use permits. So that's in keeping with current practice in the city that anybody who builds in that zone, we're kind of the last resort as a land use authority for those conditional use permits.
So should we, because that's actually the next agenda item, should we talk about that because I didn't know we were going to change that until I saw it in the packet.
So I think we could have that discussion, but for this particular document we're talking about, there's only two conditional uses listed. One of them is for outdoor sales and seasonal storage. And it already says the council is the land use authority there. That doesn't mean the Planning Commission doesn't hear it. It goes to the Planning Commission still, and then, but we're the final word on it.
Yeah, they make a recommendation. The Planning Commission will make a recommendation.
To the council.
Okay.
And so we just somehow omitted saying that the city council is the land use authority for conditional permits for uses as well.
So you want to add language in there saying the Planning Commission or the City Council is the land use authority for conditional uses in the SC1 zone?
Yes, and that would go in section 10.6A.3.
Mrs. Reese, are you okay with that?
No, that's what I'm saying. Is the very next agenda item is talking about conditional uses, and it doesn't have the council as the final authority.
Yeah, and I have a whole long list of things to talk about.
It doesn't, but if I could go to Title 9B is the powers and duties of the Planning Commission, and they have the approve, not approve, recommend, not a recommend. It's really how it's dictated in the code
But the wording there is based on what the council delegates to them.
Right. So in this case, where this council is specifically listed as the land use authority, the Planning Commission would make a recommendation on it in that case. On others, the Planning Commission would be the ultimate land use authority.
And so I think
It'd be a shared duty split up.
Yeah, when we get to that document, which is our next item, I think I'm going to list out for you the various conditional uses I found in our code, and we can have a nice, robust discussion about which we should be the ultimate say on and which we're comfortable giving to the Planning Commission and which should go to staff.
Right, and because I think there's ultimately three possible land use authorities and they probably each have their own space and place.
Any more questions?
So you would add that to 10.6A.3, you said?
I would add a sentence to 10.6A.3 specifying that the City Council is the land use authority for conditional use permits in the SC1 zone. And then I would make the fix to the map that's included in the prior section. And then I have some architectural changes I would like to make, but I think those are less pressing, and so I'll bring those through the Planning Commission in a subsequent month.
Okay.
To tighten up how we deal with the colonial architectural style.
Anything else from my left side? Mr. Bailey, Mr. Crawley?
Nope.
Mr. Geddes?
One of the things, I was just reading this over and talking about the landscaping and planning and all that kind of stuff. It just seems like we're pretty darn specific, and I'd like to leave just, if we could put a sentence in there, like, or approved alternative. Like, the thing that bothers me the most, and just because I'm involved right now in landscaping, but it says, just the one, all plan areas shall be edged with a concrete mill strip and landscaped. Well, there's some really good products out there. They're steel, and it's a steel mill strip. You plant it in the ground, works great, but it's cool, and it's new. But we get stuck with old technology because it's in our code. I mean, I just like to have some little caveat in here that, or approved alternatives, rather than just forcing everybody to be the...
For that particular one, or for are there more?
No, just everything in here, like maybe in the bottom of the whole landscaping thing, or approved alternatives,
so,
or something like that.
Chandler, correct me if I'm wrong, but a developer who comes to the city who says, hey, I don't like this particular part of your regulations, can petition the Planning Commission to change those.
Correct.
And then we go through a process to change that.
Correct.
Get it approved.
Yeah.
You can always ask for a variance, so, right?
Yeah, they're difficult.
In this case, I would say that they wouldn't meet the criteria for a variance. There's specific criteria that state outlines as far as getting a variance. So I think the easier route to take would be what Daniel suggested, is to just petition the Planning Commission, the City Council, to alter the code. In this case, it would be code, so it would be a Title 10 issue, which means public hearings in the Planning Commission and the City Council. But if it's an issue that everyone feels is a good thing for the city, it shouldn't be hung up too much.
That's all I'm saying. I'm just saying it's just, you know what I'm...
I think the original intent, though, was to have a sense of continuity throughout the landscaping. That's why it lists the trees that will line each road.
Yeah, so that, no, I understand that.
So that you don't look at it and see each subdivision as its own landscaping palette.
You know, I kind of view this as more of a living document going forward, whereas this was a dead document for a very long
time. Yeah.
And now, as was mentioned, we should review this, and I think we will. So if there's, you know, anything that you would like to address in the future, please bring it to our attention.
And my point is, if we had a process, and maybe it's if it's not just a word in our code, but a simple process that if you're making a change to a design that makes sense, you know, it's maybe it's new and no one's ever heard of it or whatever, rather than have to go through the whole Planning Commission, public hearings.
But that's a simple process, is it not?
Yeah, but it delays. I mean, it's a delay.
Here's what I would suggest. I think that's actually a good idea for some things in the code, mm-hmm. versus not others. Like, I wouldn't say just blanket, you can get any use approved by the Planning Commission.
I'm talking about use. I'm talking about specifics.
But for very specific things like that, what I would suggest is that you and I could sit down sometime and identify, like, maybe that applies to landscaping and maybe that applies to streetscapes, but not to parking or something
sure.
like that. And we could identify where that applies, and then it's just a simple matter of, rather than making every developer come through for that and go through a 2-month or 3-month delay, let's just run it through the Planning Commission in the next month or two and make changes to this
Fine.
Document. And I would totally agree we should do that.
Okay.
I would just rather not hold
it. I just
want to
make it easier.
I agree. We got to find a way to make things like that.
And to stay current with sort of new trends and things. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Mrs. Reese, do you have any questions?
No.
Okay. I will take a motion on this then.
So I move that we approve Resolution 5-13-2016B.
This is ordinance.
Excuse me. I move that we approve Ordinance 5-13-2016A, an ordinance adopting Title 10, Chapter 6A, of the Cedar Hills Municipal Code regarding design requirements for planned commercial developments, subject to the following changes. Fixing the map showing the office district boundaries, as we've outlined in this meeting. Specifying that the council, city council, is the land use authority for conditional uses in the SC1 zone in Section 10-6A-3. I would also like to direct staff to amend the zoning map in code to reflect these changes.
Okay, that was a long motion. Did everyone get that?
Yep.
Any questions on that? Do I have a second?
Second.
I think Mrs. Reese had the second on that. Any further discussion? No? Okay, let's have a vote. Start from my left. Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move on to item number 11. Mr. Goodwin, stay where you are. Talking about conditional use permits. This is an action item on amendments to Title 10, Chapter 5. Go right ahead.
I would say that a section outlining the city's conditional use permit process has probably been a gaping hole in the city's code that's in need of being plugged. So what we're proposing tonight is conditional use permit code that would outline how one goes about obtaining a CUP. The language itself came from a couple of different cities, Saratoga Springs and Murray, and I believe Lehigh. We took some elements from it. I sat down and met with Chris Bramhall from Curt and McConkie, and we went through the code. So it has had a legal review. The big thing that I think the discussion tonight is going to be on is probably on 10-5-37E, the approval process. As it's written right now, As a conditional use permit right now would be required to be approved by the Planning Commission. Now, uses outlined as conditional uses in our city code get from anywhere from as grand as a subdivision and utility transmission lines to a fence. So it's a wider range. There's including home occupation businesses, accessory apartments. So there's all these things that.
I have a long list for you I could read.
There's a probably 15 or 16, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're outlined in each zone. And I have a list as well. But what we wanted to do was to break it up so that the Planning Commission and the staff and possibly the City Council each had roles in approving conditional use permits. And there was a litmus test in 10-5-37E that gave authority to one body or another, and that litmus test was if it's an expanded, it's a new or expanded structure or a change in the primary use of the structure, it would go to the, in this case, the Planning Commission and possibly the City Council. If it was no change in the existing structure or the site, it would just be an administrative decision done by staff. So that was the test that we did, and this was recommended to us by Chris Bramhall that works over in Saratoga Springs. So are there questions on the approval process? I know that there are.
So right now, if I'm understanding how it's reading correctly, it's saying that for a conditional use permit, a new conditional use permit, that it would go to the Planning Commission and they are the land use authority. It doesn't come to the council after that.
The way it's written right now, because mm-hmm.
That's correct.
That's how the code is written right now.
Yeah.
That's how this is written.
No, that's how the code is also written.
No, because our code
is coming to us.
No, 9-1B-5G is matters delegated to the City Council or to the Planning Commission. It's to hear or decide any matter that the City Council designates, including the approval or denial of or recommendations to approve or deny conditional use permits. So up until this point, they've approved or denied unless it's been a matter specifically delegated to the City Council, i.e. Walmart, outsourced storage, is outlined in their development agreement that the City Council would be the ones that grant a conditional use permit for them to store outside, which we've been in contact with them. We're trying to get a hold of them.
And it's specified in code that in the commercial zone that the council would.
Okay, yeah. So but something is something like draw a blank here. But let's say for home occupation businesses, if that were to have gone to the city, the Planning Commission, they would be the ultimate land use authority there. But what we're proposing now is that if somebody has a salon that they run out of their home and there's no structural changes to the home where they're building on a grand new addition or changing the primary purpose of the home into a giant salon, it would just be approved in-house in staff. If they met the business code requirements that is outlined in Title 3, we would issue that conditional use permit. Same thing with fences, accessory dwelling units, anything that doesn't require a new building or a new site. If it's a change in the primary use of the building. So let's say that you had a home that wanted to get a conditional use permit for a dance studio, and they're changing their entire home into a dance studio. That's a change in the primary structure. Or let's say that somebody
primary
wanted to convert
use of the structure.
A primary use of the structure. Let's say somebody wanted to convert a home into an assisted living facility. That's a change in the primary use of the home. So that would go to the Planning Commission. That may not be in the SC1 zone. So they would be, in this case, they would be the ultimate land authority on their approving the CUP.
So what you're saying is that this approval process doesn't pertain to the commercial area, it's for just all of the residential area.
The way I see it, it's for the city as a whole. But if you change the code that we just approved, you just change the code that you approved, 10.6A, to say any conditional use permit in the SC1 would go to the city council.
So I think that should be added in here as well then. Because otherwise you just look at this and it looks like the Planning Commission is the final authority on any conditional use permit.
I hate doubling up on code like that because you change one and then you don't change the other when you change things, and then it gets confusing.
Yeah, so, yeah, I agree. So it's actually 10.6.3 that we've been accustomed to all these years. It's the large-scale development,
yeah.
And that's why we've had so many things come before the council, because anything that takes place in the commercial zone is covered under large-scale development. One possibility would be to do a similar thing that we did with our land use table, which is list out a table of all of the different conditional use permits that can be obtained in the city, and then specify who the land use authority is for that particular permit. So this would include things like listing out fences, walls, and hedges. We probably would say staff. If it says assisted living facility, we have to decide, you know, do we want to let the Planning Commission allow someone to convert a home to assisted living facility, or would we want to see that ourselves? If it's an accessory apartment, who approves that? Home occupations, small animal units. We could go through and make a list of these and then have the council discuss like where the land use authority should be for each of those. And there's a lot of duplication in these lists throughout. In each zone, it lists them, and they're often duplicated in various different places.
I think that makes sense. I think, I guess my concern with having, like I said, if you just look at the conditional use process, it doesn't say anything about, except for SC1 goes to council. And so my
right.
concern is, we had that same issue already, right? Which is one document said one thing and one document said another thing. And so then it was confusing, like which one actually carries more weight, which one, you know, they don't say the same thing. And so I just think that if we're going to go through this process, we want to make sure again, that no matter where you go in our code, you know the direction you're going, you know what the process is, it's consistent, whether you're looking at design guidelines or the city code or the general plan. That's one of the issues we've had, is that they haven't been mm-hmm. consistent. And the way I read it now, if I was just looking at the conditional approval process, there would be nothing in here that would tell me if I'm building in the SC1 zone, it's going to go to the council as the final say.
Right.
So I like the idea of a table.
And there may be exceptions littered throughout other pieces of the code that I mean, I did a 10-minute walkthrough this evening, but I may have missed some where it specifies that the council is the land use authority. And so we would have to hunt through code right now to find where did we say that we're going to specify council, and where did we say that we're going to specify Planning Commission. So it would be useful to make a run through code and put it all on one table in one place. Now, I don't know if that means we table that tonight and say, hey, let's do some work on that and come forward with a proposed table 2 weeks from now.
Well, I know when I was on the Planning Commission, we wrestled with that occasionally because all those conditional uses like fences or a salon. What if they went in and Planning Commission doesn't meet for a month? You know, there are all those issues. Like, should we come back? You know, should we make that person wait on something that could be administrative? And I like that idea of making a table that administrative things can just be done by staff.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do think there's some things that we should push to staff.
I think it's a benefit to the resident to push a lot of the things to staff. Things like fences are to have to wait a month to put your fence in because you have to go to the Planning Commission, or a hedge. Seems a little bit ridiculous to me. Same thing with home occupation. We have a very good set of standards that list what is required for home occupation. I think that can be done on staff. Accessory dwelling units, there's code, and then there's also building code that the city would follow. In fact, I don't know if you guys know this, but according to our records, there are no accessory dwelling units in the city.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
So because they find out that, okay, we have to go to the Planning Commission, well, I can just start renting out my home and no one's the wiser. So there's definitely an issue here. So I think that's the big hang-up is when I say you have to go to the Planning Commission, because I get calls probably two or three times a week from realtors asking if it's a legal option in the city. And I said, yes, as of right now, we have none. Legal. So.
But then there's other things like planned residential developments
right.
in various zones that we might want to
but this
say.
Would, but council. In something like that, it would already go to the Planning Commission and the City Council twice as part of the approval process.
So another question. In 10.536 now H, it talks about the appeal of decisions, and it says...
Sorry, this is 10.537. I'm sorry if you have the old document that says 36. It should be 37.
Oh, this is the one I have in Dropbox.
Okay.
Sorry.
For purposes of approving or not approving, it's 37.
Okay.
So.
Yes.
So it says, it talks about appeals, and it says you have the right to appeal the decision of the land use authority to the appeal authority, but it doesn't say in the section who the appeal authority is. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it should.
So who is the appeal authority?
The appeal authority should be in a very different code, which should be outlined in the city's appeal authority that needs to be adopted in the next 2 weeks. That is a good question, because right now it ultimately is the Board of Adjustment. So if the Planning Commission makes a decision, that can be appealed to the City Council. If the City Council makes a decision, that ultimately, according to our current code, gets appealed to the Board of Adjustment. Now that's a little bit backwards, that you have a group of not elected representatives being the appeal authority for a group of elected representatives. The Board of Adjustment should be the appeal authority for the Planning Commission or sometimes administrative decisions, but the City Council's appeal authority should just be district court.
Agreed, and I think that's how PG has it set up.
Right.
If you don't like the City Council,
so that will be outlined and fleshed out further in when that appeal authority code gets approved. That's part of the whole moratorium process that we're working on. We just don't want to outline it here because this only applies to conditional use permits, whereas the appeal authority should apply to any decision made in the city, whether that's administrative citations or a CUP.
So will this section reference where they can go find that? I'm looking at it from me.
I'm
a resident and I need to build a fence and I need to appeal. I don't want to have to search through Sterling codifiers to figure out where my appeal authority is. How do I easily find it?
We should reference that. And so in some cases, so let's say you brought up the issue of a fence. If you were to look at the fence code, it's 10.518. There is actually an appeal authority in that code. So if somebody doesn't like the decision we've made, they can go set up an appointment with the city manager and bring it up with him. And if they don't like his decision, then it can come to the city council. So there's already some appeal authorities given for some codes currently in the city code.
So that will be referenced here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any more questions, Jenny?
Not from me, no.
Okay.
On this
Anyone
section?
From my left side?
There's still other sections we got to talk about.
You're still plowing
yeah,
through.
Yeah, we just that was just Sorry, the actual approval process. No, that was just the approval process.
Just so you know, from page 2-3 on, you still had 36 instead of 37. At least
did it not get changed
on our drop?
Yes.
Yeah, are you guys looking at the?
I'm looking.
Oh, you know
the
what?
Very
it didn't get
one.
Changed halfway through. It's 36. Or sorry, it's 37.
It's 37.
I should be confused. Now I'm just confusing. It's 37. I apologize for the confusion there. The other thing is, in 10.537F is a public hearing. Right now, we're not requiring a public hearing. State code does not require a public hearing. We feel like it is staff's recommendation that we follow state code and not require a public hearing on conditional use permits. But there is the option to hold a public hearing if public input may be warranted for together info on an application. However, given the current list of CUPs, we feel it might be a little bit redundant, time-consuming for staff to go through the process of requiring a public hearing for each CUP. So, are there any questions on that?
I wonder if we could also... in this same table, when we specify the land use authority, also specify whether there would be a public hearing.
And in some of them...
Because we may want them for a planned residential development, for example.
In that case, the approval
which
process
we would have
already
anyway,
has
right? But there might be some
hearings.
Others.
So there'd be other... We could look at the other ones, but I mean, in some of them, that already requires in other places that they have a public hearing, such as approval of developments. But something like... A home occupation business.
Changing a home into an assisted living facility where that's going to increase the amount of traffic.
And this would be an area where the city would say, and I think we did it for the Osmond facility when it converted to a from a home to assisted living, we did have a public hearing. And what we would do in that case is we would put a sign on the property and we would notify the residents because in that case, it does affect them.
Yeah.
So I think the city has used good judgment in the past, and I think it will continue to do so. So, finally, the last thing I want to go over is 10.536G. This is just want to outline that right now we're setting the standards for granting a condition. We're not setting the conditions. You list the standards, and in here you have A, B, C, D, E, F, which list the standards, which are everything from lighting to dirt, noxious matter, glare, compliance with the general plan, utility capacity. So you don't list the condition. You list like lighting, and you say, okay, lighting needs to be conducive to the zone that it's in. And then the condition is, okay, you can't have flood lamps because of the way that they'll project into the neighbor's yard. You don't put the condition right now, you just list the standards. So if you've gone, had a chance to review the standards here, are there any recommendations, are there any questions on the standards being listed?
Yeah, I would just add one, that we ask that it be in compliance with the intent of the zone as well.
Is that not in there? I swear that's in there. If you look at E, that'll be compatible with the general plan of the city and permitted zoning. And then look at the last, and comply with the standards of the zone.
Okay, I thought we had it in there. I was looking for it.
I swear that was in there. So if there's no other standards, that's all I have. If there's any questions, I'll love to entertain them.
Council, any questions? Nope. All right, I will take a motion then.
So I move that we table this item and direct staff and myself to work on putting together a table of various conditional permits and have it ready for discussion next time as to who will be the land use authority.
But this will have to be a review action next time.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're under a deadline and we need to have it review action at that time.
As well as the appeal authority code.
Yes.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Crawley seconded. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mr. Cipolla.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move on to item number 12, which is tentative budget. Does anyone need a break before we dive into this? If not, let's go forward.
Press on.
I'm just wondering if anybody has an HP cord, laptop cord with them that I can steal for... No?
I did not bring one.
I have one in my office at work.
I have one at my house too. But that's okay.
Mr. Lowe, go right ahead. Time's yours.
Thanks.
Seriously, Lowe.
Okay.
28%, so we'll see how it goes.
We are asked to pass a tentative budget tonight, so... the budget that I have in front of you only has some minor changes from our prior discussions. I'm just going to give you a little update. Hopefully this works.
Was working.
Do you need me to run it?
I have one of those too in case you're out of battery. Did you flip the on switch on the side?
I tested it earlier and it was working. Yeah,
I don't have mine, but
it was check the cord because I saw a glitch.
Now it's not even.
There you go.
There you go.
So first we had it. Oh my gosh. First, there's a list of the priorities that were made in January, and the only update I had is from a meeting while I was not here. I was told that the practice range was fencing was put in front of the communication staffing. The latest economic trends according to Zions for Utah are very positive. Unless you're an employer trying to hire someone and you can't find anyone to hire because the unemployment rate's so low. but a lot of positive signs in our area. The 115.5 Consumer Attitude Index for Utah is significantly higher than the National Attitude Index, which is in the 90s. So the small changes that were made were the communications position was removed, the fire contract was changed to a $7,000 instead of an estimate that was higher before, and we increased the transfer to $20,000 to the capital projects fund and added the budget line item for a practice range fencing. Adjusted some of the benefit costs based on the dental proposals, and we're still working on the health care plan proposals. Our current plan came in 23% higher than last year, and so we're looking at alternatives. Also added a placeholder for some sewer improvements this next year.
That's a lot of money. Explain that a little bit more.
That would be 4600 West, most likely. But David, based on my discussions with David, and he can enlighten you more, but he's been talking to TSSD and which lines are showing the most stress. Mm-hmm. And so, David, did you want to comment?
Yeah, just on that, we are doing some more investigation, and as part of the CCAP study, we will be doing an evaluation on capacities of the sewer outfalls, and that's where we're having some issues on one of our outfall main lines, and they're very expensive to fix because they are the outfall. So I have been in communication with the sewer district. They come up and fix our meter. They basically calibrate our meter on a consistent basis, so they watch what our flows are doing, and we also have some data from the meter itself. So that's what we're evaluating right now to find out if that upgrade has to happen, when it has to happen, and what size it's going to be increased to.
How old is that line?
That was one of the first lines that was put in. I would say it's in the 90s, 1990 time frame that it was put in. So we're talking 20 plus years.
And how long do they generally last? What's the range,
If it's the design life is a 50-year design life typically for sewers. Mm-hmm. But it does not, the pipe itself has not degraded. It's not the fact that the pipe needs to be replaced because of deterioration. Mm-hmm. It's capacity.
Gotcha.
So, and a lot of times with sewers, that's what forces you to upgrade is, the line capacity versus the deterioration of the line.
Gotcha.
Okay. How much of the city does that serve?
That serves the old part of the city, a lot of the area down in the Sunset, Dorchester area. It also comes up Cedar Hills Drive and serves the Juniper Heights area. So it's quite a large percentage of the city. I don't know the exact percent, but that's one of our main outfall lines. And that's why in the commercial zone, we're master planning all the sewer to head out to 4800 West to make sure that we use that capacity out there, because there's plenty of capacity out there. So we have three outfall lines. There's the line out on 4800 West. There's the line that goes right behind Temple Shadows, and the American Fork water tank is down there. And then we also have the line that goes over 4600 on where Bridgestone is, Bridgestone Drive.
Thanks. Okay, we have a lot of things still up in the air as far as what the actual pricing will be, and so we have some placeholders in there, but with the construction boom, I am expecting that we're going to make changes to this budget, not just in this, this is going to be as the bids come up or as these things come up, we're going to have to evaluate it, you know, do we want to pay a certain amount or how much of the project can we get done? And that really isn't going to happen until we get some real bids. So in the budget right now, we have placeholders, and that's what this shows. But we don't have any placeholder for secondary meters. We don't have we have a placeholder for sewer improvements, and we don't have a placeholder yet for arbor study. But those are all things that we need actual numbers for. So compared to last year, our major general revenues are sales taxes, franchise taxes, and motor vehicle fees. And we're about $30,000 higher this year than we were a year ago. With 9 months, that's just over, it's about $3,500 or so a month. Franchise tax fees, we had a much more mild winter the year before, so those are a little bit higher. And motor vehicle fees are pretty flat. This is another look at how each month our distribution has been compared to the last few years. And the most current year is the mustard line. So we've only had 1 month where it wasn't higher than the previous year. And
mostly because Walmart's increasing their sales, do you think? Or what do you think is driving that?
Well, most of our 75% of our money is from population. And so when Utah's, even our 1 month that we were down, the total, which was 2 months ago, the total sales tax for Utah overall was still up. So that meant that two things is other cities are growing faster than us, so we're getting a smaller amount of the total pie. And the other part is, we had 1 month where maybe our commercial area didn't perform as well as the year before. It could just be a timing issue because every other month was higher. And so, but so far, Walmart and the other places have done. If you look at our care tax revenues, they've consistently been higher, which is actually only point of sale. So it'll be interesting to see how dollar store impacts that. I don't. So the program revenues have been doing also better. Green fees were up through March. Pro shop revenues were up. And our event center rentals were actually a little bit less. And our recreation programs were up almost 25%. So Highland and Alpine are really bought into a lot of our programs now, which in the past we might have some participants, but obviously we're getting more from their city. And it's helping us break even in recreation probably for the first time in several years.
I'll just say thank you to Greg for establishing those relationships.
Yeah. Yes. So
also, is the events possibly because of our reductions on Mondays and Tuesdays?
Yeah,
we sure. I think we know that. I mean, yeah. I think we understood that, yeah, and I think we're happy for
we're
that.
Good, we're good with that. I'm good with
and
that.
And it's a very small loss.
Yeah.
We're getting more use, yeah, just not as much revenue from it.
Like Jenny said, it's $3,500.
Yeah.
I'm good with it.
Plus damage. So overall, if you look at the community services budget, last year was the first year that includes events, which has done really well the last couple of years, you can see the growth in the total community services budget, and that's because we added the events that take place in this building. So in before 2013, the overall budget was much smaller. But there's also been a lot of growth in recreation. So the ones that we will always subsidize, because they're really, I mean, we've minimized the family festival the last few years. But library, there's no revenue coming in for that. And YCC, they're allowed to use the revenue that they create through their fundraisers for their activities. So that one. And summer concerts, we don't charge for those. So these are always going to be subsidized. The recreation event center and concessions is the one that we've had the most improvement the last couple of years, and that's historical. This next year is going to be way better than even 2015. Construction, like I said earlier, is really hot, and I'm sure you all know just how fast homes sell now. And solar hasn't slowed down. I talked to Jeff. It's still a hot thing. That's where most of our building permits plan check. But we're getting housing. We're getting some housing permits too, a couple here and there, and that's picking up too. This last chart. The blue line shows the police costs since 2005. The yellow line shows fire and paramedic. And the purple lines dispatch, crossing guards, and animal control. So the last couple of years on dispatch, we've paid more towards the new dispatch center. And then in 2010, we lost our transport revenues, and we also lost grant money that was helping pay for paramedics. And then we also increased staffing. We didn't have staffing in our public safety building before that time. So we changed the way the city was served and improved that. So that's kind of the highlights. I didn't want to. The final budget to me is the one where it really matters. But even at that point, it's a living document, and we're going to have to revisit it throughout the year. And you're going to have to make decisions on, especially on the project type things. If there's questions you have on the operations, I think Greg's area and has been doing really well, but if you have any questions about operations or the projects, I
just have one question. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you covered this before, and I just don't remember, but on 40-99-105, the bond financing proceeds revenue is $1.6 million. What is that?
Yeah, so we really, if that is the bond money that we would be required to issue if we were to complete Deerfield, which we have budgeted for.
Okay, so that's assuming that gets hired. Okay, why have we never had that on the budget before?
That's just a refinement that bugged me. Sorry.
That's okay.
We never had the bond listed. We had
the expense.
We had the expense, and I just wanted to balance the budget.
Okay.
40-101.
Mm-hmm.
40-99-105
in the capital projects fund, page 8.
Are there any other questions?
Are you through with your presentation?
If you'd like, we can go over. I included a couple other things.
Let's see if they have questions, and then go.
I'm good.
So,
I think the one question I have,
yes,
is can we, when we get...
Can you speak in your mic, please?
Certainly. When we get the final budget, Just to help us, can you also bring the fund balances so that we can see? You know, because we see here for various different funds that there's going to be that the fund balance is depleted or increased, and it's just nice to know what the bottom line number is for all those fund balances.
Yeah. Yeah, I can project that. Some of those numbers change every month, but
yeah,
I can give you a rough idea.
Any other questions, Daniel?
No.
Mr. Bailey?
No.
Mr. Crowley?
Just one quick question. Maybe I missed this. Dispatch fees, why are they down half on the fiscal 2017 budget?
Because the last 2 years we've been making one-time payments for their new building.
Okay.
So that's just our normal operating cost.
I'll make a motion.
Mrs. Reese?
No questions.
Go ahead with your motion.
I'll make a motion to approve tentative fiscal year 2016-17 budget.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
A second.
Seconded by Mr. Bailey. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Mr. Geddes?
Aye.
Mr. Crowley?
Aye.
Mr. Bailey?
Aye.
Mr. Cipolla?
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's go to item number 13, also an action item.
Forgot about that.
On the care tax. Mr. Grunker, go right ahead.
I didn't do this before.
Just seconded that motion.
Okay.
Bend it.
Yeah. Mayor and Council, we spoke a little bit about this in the work session, but just want to review. Tonight you have before you a review action for a resolution notifying the County Commission of potentially the city's intent to ask the voters an opinion question regarding a possible imposition of a care tax. We already have the care tax in place now. The voters voted on that in 2008. It was enacted in 2009. And per the state code, at the end of the eight-year period, the city has the option to submit another opinion question to the voters and ask them if they would like to continue with the care tax. And so that is before you now, as the care tax would end if the city does not put this back on the ballot. And so this first step is to send a resolution to the County Commission notifying them of the city's intent, if that is the desire of the council, and if the county is going to impose a care tax or a ZAP tax or something similar, then the city would not be able to do one as well. So that's why we have to notify the county to make sure they're not going to do one. If they say that they're not, then they will send that back within 60 days and let us know, hey, the city can go ahead and add this to the general ballot, asking this opinion question if the citizens would like to approve the care tax for a period of another 10 years in this case. And so before you have a resolution that would be sent to the County Commission, and that would start the process for this.
Okay, questions from the council? I know we had a good discussion, work session, but if you got more questions, now's the time.
I just have a comment that the residents voted 2-1 in favor of this.
Why don't you go ahead and make a comment, and then if you want to make a motion, go right ahead.
And so I think there's strong support for this in our city. I think it's used for programs locally that our residents care a lot about.
Okay.
So I'll move that we approve resolution 5-3-2016B. A resolution notifying the Utah County Commission of the City of Cedar Hills' intent to submit an opinion question to Cedar Hills residents regarding the possible imposition of a citywide tax to fund botanical, cultural, recreational, and zoological organizations or facilities in the City of Cedar Hills.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion was seconded by Mrs. Reese. Any further discussion? No? Let's have a vote starting with Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey?
Aye.
Mr. Crowley?
Aye.
Mr. Geddes?
Aye.
Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the conclusion of our meeting. I'll take a motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much.
I forgot to say aye, but I didn't.